Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, my friends. How is everybody doing today? This is Nicole. What's up? You've reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain. With me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. Happy to have you here today with me. Oh my goodness, parenting. Parenting, right? I know not everyone out there is a parent, but today we're going to talk about kids. And talking about TMS with kids and working with kids on TMS and helping to raise this generation of people that, with my hope, doesn't have to be married to this Western medical model of illness and lack. And so if you have kids, if you know kids, if you're a teacher, if you're an aunt, if you're an uncle, if you're a mentor, this is definitely the episode for you, and it is one that I spend a tremendous amount of time in because I have 5 children, which is one of the reasons why I opened this podcast a minute ago with going, oh, kids, because it's not that I'm not enjoying it. I actually really am enjoying being a parent, but it's a lot. It's a lot, and actually right now in the summer is a specific time to discuss this with me because I can barely find time to lock my door and come do this podcast because 5 kids and we live in a beach town and, you know, it's crazy. It's in and out. It's a lot of people wanting to go a lot of places and I'm grateful for it because with COVID, you know, kids going to the beach and properly social distancing and swimming in the water is one thing they can actually do in the summer. So it's great, but there's a lot of driving and blah, blah, blah. Who cares about my problems? But you know, I am busy, and I know you are too. And so I'm grateful that we all get to sit here for one moment and be together. It's really nice. So we're going to talk about all that with kids. I have been really mindfully bringing this message to my children since they were essentially born. And we're at the point with my kids where when they're in pain, the first thing they think of is not something is wrong with me and I need to see a doctor and I need to be manipulated or fixed. What they say is, I've got a lot going on, and we start from there. And so we're going to get to that. Okay, so what can I tell you? A lot of people are writing me with questions about the retreat. So I'm going to answer a few of the frequently asked questions really quick here. So if anybody is interested, it's just very overwhelming. And I want to apologize to everybody that reaches out to me with their stories. I wish I could return every one of your emails. I really do. And I would if I could. But, you know, I have to draw the line somewhere or I would never rest. And so thank you for sharing your stories with me. Thank you for telling me how this work is helping you. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. My heart is huge and big and grateful for every one of you who tells me how you've healed. And I wish I could write back to every one of you. And just please know that if you don't get a response from me, it doesn't mean I read every single email I get. If I get the email, I read it. It's just I'm not always able to respond to every one of them. But I do get a lot of questions about the retreat, and a lot of them are the same questions. And so let me just quickly answer those. The first is the retreat is September 18th through the 20th. It is only the weekend. It's Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday night, it's the evening from 5:30 to 7 Eastern, and Sunday, it's 10 to 5 Eastern, Saturday and Sunday, it's 10 to 5 Eastern. People in the UK are asking, you know, if it gets a little late, if they want to turn off their camera. Yes, you do not have to have your camera on the whole time. You will not disrupt the group if you need to, you know, lay down while you're listening to the end of it. It doesn't go that late. I know for UK and Europe, it'll end at like 10, 11 o'clock at night, but Our last retreat, we had a bunch of people from Europe and they said it was great. It was just fine. So that's one question I've been getting a lot. I know for the West Coast of the United States, we'll be starting kind of early, but same thing. You know, you take your time, get your coffee, turn your camera on when you're ready. Another thing I want to say, a lot of people are asking me, the retreat fee comes with a full version, a deluxe download version of my online course and all four of my original meditations. So if you're a person who's thinking about taking the course and not sure about the retreat, it's a great deal. It's a great deal to get all of that stuff included. And then you can take the course and look forward to being with us all together and getting my personal attention at the retreat in September. So those are like my main questions that I've been getting a lot of. So if you guys want to know all about it, if you want to read the bios of all the guest instructors that travel with me around the country that are going to come once again to my second virtual retreat in September, click on the retreat tab on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. There's also a link right from the homepage. You'll see it right in white on the front of the homepage that you can click through to get information about the retreat. So, okay, I hope I've done a good enough job there. Yeah, and if you need anything, there's so many free resources that I put out there. I work really hard at getting all this free work out there because I know that it costs money to do some of the stuff that I do. But if you can't afford this, you can do everything I teach for free. I know it's not as much support sometimes as people want, but it's available. So just click the resources tab on my website. It's my absolute passion to help as many people as possible, and I'm trying really hard. I know once in a while people get frustrated and they write, you know, on my Journal Speak page, or they'll write me an email and say, how can you ask me to pay another dollar for, I'm $10,000 in debt for all these failed medical treatments. And I just want to say to you, I so feel you. I get it. I understand your resentment and your anger, but this is my work. You know, sometimes I have to charge for it. I can't do everything for free, but I want to tell you that I do a lot, and anybody who wants to do this work can do this work free of charge if they want to try to do. I have a YouTube channel. I have videos. I have this podcast. So anyway, I'm trying to respond to so many things right now, so forgive me. Any case, let's move on to talking about kids. Another thing that I get, like, tons of emails that I can't always write back, is people asking me about children, about their children, about kids they know, about teaching. I get emails from a nice amount of emails from teachers, which I love, caring about how to bring this message to the children in their classes. And because, you know, a lot of teachers are dealing with kids. I've got a stomach ache. I've got a headache. You know, I can't learn this. And oftentimes it's due to emotions. So let's start at the beginning. Let's start with the fact that I have these five kids. And since they've been little, I've been well aware that they are watching me. Our kids are always watching us, whether we're teachers, parents, mentors, aunts and uncles. The kids are watching us. They're actually watching us from a space of real biology, meaning younger members of the species look up to the older members to see if they're safe or not. You know, like if somebody walks into a room and you're with a toddler and that person feels frightening to that toddler, the first thing they're going to do is look at you. They're going to look at you and they're going to assess your face, your verbal and nonverbal cues, your energy, and they're going to decide whether or not this person is safe or they have to maybe run to you and be held. And in ways that I think are complicated and simple, throughout the lifespan of raising a child, you get a lot of those looks, both actually and metaphorically, of, am I okay? Is this okay? And one of the biggest things that kids get from their parents is the transfer of anxiety. The transfer of anxiety. And I know I've done it wrong, and I know I've done it right. When I've done it wrong, it's because I did not take the time to care for myself in the way I needed. I didn't manage my own feelings around something, and I've made my kids anxious about things because they look to me and they see my anxiety and I can't hide it. And listen, we all screw that up all the time, so there's no shame that needs to be taken on for that. However, it's important to know. I think we need to own that as parents and as leaders, that the kids are going to look to us and they're going to decide in the way we respond whether they're okay. Now, there may be times where your response ends up being a response of fear because you're scared, and that's okay. But when you know better, you do better. And that's the most important thing that we need to know here. Maya Angelou, beautiful poet, said, "When we know better, we do better." And that is something that I think really has to be applied to all of this this topic, because if we shame ourselves for when we did not guide them properly or too much of our anxiety spilled out onto them, well, that's not helpful. So let's talk about Charlotte. So Charlotte is the youngest of my five children. She's currently 12. And I did a podcast with her. So if you are a regular listener of the pod, you've heard it, this story a bit, about her extra bones in her feet. I think they're called accessory nystebular bones, if I'm remembering it correctly. I haven't had to say that diagnosis for almost 2 years because of the way this worked out. So it's an important story about her feeling my fear, her responding to my fear, and then her feeling my shift and her responding to my calm, and then her responding to my apathy. So we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that, and you'll understand why I use the word apathy. So when Charlotte, so there's a condition called accessory nystebular bone. And the way it works is it's kind of like it, if you look down at your foot, it almost looks like there's an extra ankle bone. So you have your ankle bone, and then below it, where a person who doesn't have this has basically nothing, it looks like there's another bump. And she came home from camp, so it was, I guess it was 2 summers ago, so 2 years ago, and she said, "My Crocs are ruining my feet." And I was like, it was an aside. She wasn't even first home. It might have been a week after she got home, and she was standing in the kitchen, and she said, "Look, my Crocs are ruining my feet." And I looked down, and she'd also just gotten her point shoes for ballet. So, you know, I'm sensitive to the fact that point shoes are hard on a person's feet and whatever. And I looked down at her feet, and underneath her ankle bone was this red, swollen bump on each of her feet. And I panicked. Not a hysterical panic, but enough of a panic where she, in that sort of proverbial way that the little kid looks at the mom, my face did not look like a face of calm. I was like, "Oh my God." I said, "Charlotte, we need to take a picture of this and send it to Miss Kate, her dance instructor. Is it the point shoes? Is it the this?" And she's feeling my energy, which is an energy of we're not safe, which is appropriate at that moment because I literally had no idea what was going on. And I'm seeing this looking like this very abnormal, angry looking situation in my child's feet. Now, she wasn't in pain. Let's remember this part of the story for later. My daughter was not in pain. She was a 10-year-old child, somewhat lightheartedly, showing me the place where her Crocs were rubbing up against something on her foot, and I was in shock. And here's another reason I was in shock that made sense later. The way it works with this diagnosis is that bone is cartilage in a child's foot if they have this condition until about 10 or 11 years old. And at that point, the cartilage forms into bone and you can see the abnormality, whereas when she was younger, you just couldn't see it, but it was on its way. But I didn't know that. And so all I know is that my kid's foot looked one way before she went to camp, and now she's looking a different way. So we send it to Miss Kate. Miss Kate says, "That doesn't look normal." We go to a foot surgeon, a specialist, an orthopedic foot specialist. And he, and I'm not trying to be a jerk, but you know what, dudes out there, doctors, don't say messed up stuff right in front of kids. How about that? How about we don't say extreme and troubled and fearful messed up stuff right in front of kids? let's agree that that's a good idea to refrain from that. But anyway, he has her on the chair and it's all lifted up and he's looking at her feet and he had x-rayed them already. And he said, well, this is very bad. This is very bad. This is a very severe condition of the accessory vestibular bone. I would imagine this pronounced, it'll probably need surgery. So I've got this kid up there sobbing, thinking that her dance career is over, thinking that she's going to have a painful surgery. And I'm like sitting there like the most defeated, upset person that's ever lived, because this is what I do for a living. And now I'm sitting here subjecting my child to this. And I had not yet done the research. So I'm still like believing this in this moment, because I'm not immune to the medical model. And I also believe in it for what it's, for the good parts of it. So it's not that I would say, oh, never in a million years would my kid get a surgery. Like, my kid will get a surgery if it's necessary. But so we leave there and she's a total mess. And I go home and I'm doing the research on the surgery. And it is not good. The research is basically testimonials of people who say, I got the surgery, I'm still in pain. There's one that I remember well from a young dancer who said, I got this surgery and the incision site never healed. It's all nerve pain now. And these are huge red flags for TMS for me, because I know what happens when people put all their emotion and energy into one part of their body. They end up, the TMS process of this mind-body process, this sympathetic nervous system that sends us into this sustained fight or flight, we're flooded with cortisol, will use the easiest opening to divert us from our repressed emotions. Let's remember, our repressed emotions are seen by the nervous system as a greater predator than our physical pain. So if you have a surgery for something that makes you really scared, it's possible that that will continue to be inflamed as a protective response, because if you're paying attention to that, you're not paying attention to the emotions that are threatening to rise. So I know this is what happens. And so I see these testimonials and I'm like, F no, I am not putting her through this. And another thing it said was 98% of people who have this condition, which is not all that abnormal, I think something like 5% of the population has it, 98% of those people are asymptomatic. So I'm like, all right. A lot of that TMS stuff is just falling into place. Now, cut to Charlotte, who, guess what, is now in horrible pain. So when she had announced this problem to me, she was being lighthearted and she was like, look at these bones are sticking out of my feet. No pain. Now she's in pain. They're red, they're swollen, they're big. She's walking out of dance class sobbing. And so we're getting full on TMS worse. So now I realize she is looking to me and I need to change the input that she is receiving back, because we have been together on this ride of well-meaning, but now dysfunctional thinking, and we need to course correct, which it's always possible to course correct, and we need to find our way, because this, she's never over my dead body getting a surgery for something that probably will not fix her, which doesn't need to be fixed. And so, okay. So explaining this work to a 10-year-old. Now she knows what I do for a living, but honestly, my kids, now they really know. Now that I'm on Instagram, the only space to communicate with my children, they do know everything I do. But back then, at 10, I don't think she got it. You know, mommy's a therapist and she helps people with their feelings, and sometimes your feelings can turn into pain. But she looked at her very physical feet and did not apply that, and was very resistant and was very eye-rolly with me when I said, honey, I think that this is, yes, real, because the pain is never in your head and the condition is never not real. This is real, and this is something that you have. On paper, you have this condition, but this does not need to hurt you, and this does not need to be a problem for you. This will always be the way your feet look, but this does not need to be a problem where you have symptoms, and this could, and dancers can dance with this condition till they're old and gray. And she is giving me the side eye, but she's listening. And what she's watching, I believe, now that I'm looking back at this, more than anything, is my energy. I completely calmed down. There was no longer any sort of confusion. I was sure. And I was saying, this is how we're going to handle this now. We're going to understand first. So remember, there's three facets of my work. Believe, do the work, and patience and kindness for yourself. We're going to understand first that this is what's happening. I know we thought that this was something that might need to be manipulated in your body in order to be fixed. I know better now. So now we're going to do better. And we're going to look at this properly, which is that you have a lot going on. You know, you're 10 years old. You have a lot of pressures with school and with friends and with the way you feel about yourself, because everybody does. And it's a lot of big feelings. You have big feelings, and they're being expressed right now because this is something that your body is naturally changing into. It went from cartilage to bone. You're evolving, you're growing. And this is something that's part of how you're built and how you're shaped, which is maybe not the norm, but who cares? You're fine. And I'm fine with that. And we're going to be okay. We're going to acknowledge your feelings, but you need to know that nothing is wrong. And she started to feel my energy there. And then I did something, and this is a little bit of a trick, but realize this episode is about talking to children. This episode is not about talking to fully formed adults who can intellectualize to the extent that I need them to sometimes to believe. I said to her, listen, we're not doing the surgery. That's off the table. So that immediately her fear went down a little bit, but she was still having these terrible symptoms, these painful feet. And I said, let's do this. I'm going to go on Amazon and we're going to buy ice foot wraps. So, you know, whatever. It's not like you need it in order to, you know, feel better in the long run, but let's buy the ice foot wraps and I'll bring them with you and I'll bring them to dance when I pick you up and we can just wrap your feet in them. Why not feel as much relief as you can feel? And I know that you might say, knowing me, but Nicole, that draws to the physical, but you have to understand with children, it's about caring for them. Like, this would be tantamount to, like, if your kid has nightly stomach aches, instead of just telling them, go feel your feelings, you know, like to say, like, well, you know what? Listen, your stomach aches are coming from your fear or your sadness or your anxiety or, you know, your anger. That's where they're coming from. But maybe if we get that warm water bottle and while I read to you at night, we just let it lay on your belly, because that's a loving thing to do for yourself. Remember, everything motivated by love is the right thing. And so I explained to her that let's love her feet up with these ice packs. Now, I knew what I was doing. I knew that the ice packs weren't going to solve the problem, but with kids, it's more complicated than that, and I knew that this factor would help. I just got this intuition it would help. I've never had to do anything like this with any of my kids so specifically before. But I was right. So I got these ice packs, and I would put them in the freezer, and when got out of dance to get into the car, I'd be like, okay, let's put them on. Squeeze your feet up. Love them up. Give your feet these big hugs in these ice packs. And at first, she was like serious about it, you know, okay, mom, I put my ice packs on. But then like it got to the point and I could see as she was starting to calm down, as we were starting to talk more about her feelings. So that's the do the work part. She was doing some simple journaling work. I said, just make a list of the things that are on your mind and maybe write a couple sentences about each of those things. And I'll talk at the end of the podcast about, you know, like sort of a plan to do if you have a child you're thinking about that you're going to work with. And so we're doing the work, and she started to kind of put the ice packs on as like, almost like to appease me. It was kind of cute. She's like, all right, okay, all right, mom, hand it to me. I'll put it on. So then we started, you know, as I said, doing the work, which was this little bit of journaling and making it clear in the process that this was the only thing that was going on. Yes, she has this normal abnormality. She doesn't look exactly the same as all her friends. By the way, in researching it, her father also has them. He's asymptomatic, so we never thought about it. He's not a dancer at all. It's not that abnormal. It's a normal abnormality, just like my spondylolisthesis is. It's not a freak thing, and it doesn't have to cause pain. So she was doing the work, and when she got perfectionistic, about her dance or about her grades or about whatever was going on, I was like, honey, you need to operate with patience and kindness for yourself. I'm sorry. I know that's annoying to have to be held to that standard, but you're the kind of person that's going to feel your feelings in your body. And by the way, since then, I've seen her TMS, her symptom imperative, move all around. She has gotten ankle pain during lacrosse season and heel pain. She has gotten anxiety when she was going from elementary to middle school. So she's like me, like you, like all of us. She's an amazing soul. She's a big feeler, and she feels things in her body sometimes. And I said, honey, you know, sometimes we feel things in our hearts and sometimes we feel things in our bodies, and you are going to be one of those people that feels things in your body sometimes when it's too much for your heart, because your heart is so overflowing with how much you feel for other people, how much you worry. That's just how you're built. Let's practice acceptance around that, and let's be patient and kind to you. This was a lot of work, and this was hard on me. I struggled because I want my children to be happy and peaceful and okay. And so it hurt to watch her suffer, but there was no other way out for her than through. Just like there's no other way out for you than through, and there's no other way out for me than through. There is no other way out than through. And I went through it with Charlotte. And I'd say it took about maybe a month. I mean, I don't like to put timelines on anything, but it wasn't that long. Little by slowly, I would forget the ice pack, or she would forget to ask me for it, even if I had it in the car. Little by slowly, she would have a play date with a friend and forget to do the journaling because she didn't have anything really on her mind anymore because she'd been practicing it so much. Like I said, journaling is not a life sentence. It's at the beginning when you have terrible symptoms, it needs to be an everyday practice, but as they resolve, it can be as needed. It's in your toolbox. And so that started to happen. She started to forget about it. And that is when my behavior changed from fear to acceptance and kindness and helpfulness to apathy. And apathy is very important at the end, once we've done what we basically need to do, because we really help kids who are looking to our faces for our guidance on whether or not they are in danger. Apathy is the absolute expression of no danger. If my child is playing in a room that I feel is completely and utterly safe, you know, the doors are secure, the people in the room are safe, and she's whining and crying and desperate for my attention, and if I'm like, listen, I can't deal with you right now, okay? I have to draw a boundary. I've got what I'm doing. Go play. And I'm like not concerned in that moment with whether or not she's okay or safe. The only thing I can give her in that moment, the only message is, you're totally safe. You're so safe that I can't even be concerned about you in this moment because I have something I need to deal with. We all know those feelings as a parent, and they're normal and they're actually healthy, because a child who's attended to constantly becomes very demanding, and that's not helpful for them because the world will not meet them in that same place. But if a child is cared for and loved and shown that they are held, and then when it's time to draw a boundary and you can't give them your full attention and you show, I know the word apathy has a bad connotation, but it's the right word. It means you don't care one way or another. I understand that, you know, you would really like to have that snack right now or that toy right now, but right now is not the time, so go deal with yourself kind of attitude. That shows them they are so safe. They're so safe that you do not need to intervene. So when, after this whole really acute part of this pain started to subside, once in a while she was like, but the bones in my feet, but what if I can't? I'd be like, Char, you're done. This is done. There's no reason for me to give attention to this right now. You are fine. I'm totally sure that you are fine and you know what to do. And if you need my guidance or if you need help in, you know, getting back to your journaling practice or whatever, I'll help you, but you're good. We're done here. And that, my friends, is when this became a lovely chapter in our book that we don't really go back and read much. It has been about 2 years. I mean, it wasn't long for this to go away, so maybe it was like a year and 3/4. She dances, I mean, during the school year, she dances 4 nights a week. She has no pain. I haven't even looked at her feet in over a year in terms of, let me see the bones. I mean, it's over. And she is perfectly fine. And this is a beautiful ending to a story that could have been really tragic. If I listened to that doctor, who, by the way, was incredibly sure that she needed surgery, if I made her go through that, I'm just telling you, this kid, She's such a deep feeler, and she's an anxious kid, just how she's wired. This could have gone really bad, and I don't want that. I don't want that for anybody. I don't want it for anyone's child. And now this is a very, very physical example, but it's an important example because it's so concrete. I'm going to tell quickly another story, and then I'm going to get at the end of the podcast to some real to-dos for you guys. The other story is Oliver. So Oliver is my middle child. Right now he's 15. And some of you have read my blog, and I don't post to it a lot because I just only have so many hours in the day, but I do have some really good stuff that I've written there in the past. So if you go to my website, it's under community or blog. I forget. It's the button all the way to the right. But I think it's blog. I don't know. Sorry. But anyway, I wrote the story the day I taught my son to save himself, I think is what it's called. And it's a story of how I dealt with Oliver's extreme stomach issues when he was a young boy, which started, he had asthma as a very young child. He still has asthma, but it was extreme when he was young, like emergency room kind of extreme. And he is also, you know, surprise, surprise, I get kids that somaticize their feelings. He feels a lot. He feels deeply and he feels a lot. And sometimes it comes out into his body. And he was getting terrible stomach problems, probably from the age of like four, till about 7 or 8 when the story happened. And the story goes that we had been to the emergency room. We had gotten him all the tests. Nothing was wrong with his stomach. And when I tell you stomach problems, I don't mean, mommy, I have a stomach ache. I mean, screaming, doubled over, really severe stomach aches. And sometimes he would get dizzy. Sometimes he would throw up. We had all the tests done. He was fine. Physically, he was fine. And so we were just dealing with it. And of course, at that point, I kind of knew it was TMS because it was not similar to the bones on Charlotte's feet. It was a thing that was more obviously TMS. But of course, I still did the responsible thing, which I always tell everyone you should do, which is I got him tested. I made sure that, you know, God forbid he had a tumor, something that was making him dizzy or making him maybe some really, you know, a problem that I can't fix. But there was no problem that I couldn't fix. And so, but he was only 7 or 8 years old. How do you help a child understand that they're safe? I was doing all the right things. I was telling him, you're okay, you're fine. But I mean, it wasn't enough for a child that young. So the story goes, and this is something that you might be able to adapt a little bit, you know, in whatever way you feel comfortable, is it was Halloween and we were on our way to a party. And he chose not to wear a costume, which is very Oliver. He likes to beat to his own drummer and he's very otherwise. And he was like, I'm not wearing a costume. Fine, don't wear a costume. So we're pulling up to the party and he said, and as we're driving to the party, it was about a 25-minute drive to get there. My stomach hurts. Now, my stomach really hurts. Now he starts crying. Now he can't sit up in his seat. So I'm literally letting a 7-year-old lay on the floor of a minivan, writhing in pain because I had no other choice. You know those parenting moments where you're like, I know this isn't the right thing to do, but I have no other choice. He was screaming. And so we get to the party and it was family. So, I mean, I didn't have to go inside in terms of my kids being taken care of. I said, everyone else go in. Oliver, you stay in the car. So that kind of got his attention. And then I said, all right, come on, everyone out. Oliver, buckle in. We're going somewhere. So he crawls dramatically up onto the seat, buckles himself in, you know, leaning over, crying, carrying on. And I said, come on, let's go. So he probably thinks I'm taking him to the hospital. I mean, we really had been through a lot. And I pull into a CVS parking lot or some drugstore. And he says, and he doesn't say anything. And so we get there. And now I am using a lot of this apathy, this stern, I'm not worried, so you don't need to be worried attitude. So I'm like, get out of the car. And he's like, where are we going? And I said, just get out of the car. And he gets out of the car and he's walking behind me in the parking lot and he's doubled over and he's moaning. And he probably figures we're going to get him some medicine. You know, we are going into the drugstore. And so we walk into the drugstore and he is, you know, carrying on. And I find in my mind's eye, the most expensive thing I can see. And it is a deluxe set of Pokemon cards, the $50 deluxe set. and I pulled it off the shelf and I thrust it into his hands and I said, I'm buying this for you. And he went, what? And he looks down and he was, I absolutely got him shocked. And he goes, what do you mean? Why? It's so expensive. And I said, I'm buying this for you. Follow me. So now I'm walking through this drugstore and it's like, I don't know, 8 o'clock at night. It's completely empty. And I pull a pack of Twizzlers off the shelf and I rip it open and I said, eat this. And he goes, eat this. You didn't pay for it. And I said, I don't care. Eat it now. Have one. And now he's walking upright and he's clutching the Pokemon cards in one hand and he's got the Twizzler and he's holding it and he's kind of staring at me and I'm like, let's go. And he takes a bite and he's following me. I notice he's walking upright. I don't say anything. We get to the place where there's the toys and there are those cars where you can pull them back and they're going to go. And I take two down and I plop on the floor. I mean, I must have looked like the biggest lunatic that anyone in the store has ever seen. But I have to tell you guys, I was done. I had been dealing with this kid. I knew it was TMS. And this idea just came into my head of what I needed to do. So I didn't care how stupid I looked. I plop down on the ground of this aisle of this drugstore. And I take my car and I pull it back. And I said, race me. Now he's 7 years old, boy. I mean, he's not going to be able to resist this. So he sits down and he pulls his car back and we let them race. And they are careening down the aisle and they're bumping into the sides of the aisle and they're bumping into each other and we're laughing. And I look at him and I go, chase it. And he's got his licorice in his hand and he drops the Pokemon cards on the ground and he starts chasing his car down the aisle and he grabs it and he comes back to me. He goes, let's go again. And I look at him. And I said, hey, bud, how's your stomach? And he looked down at his stomach and he looked up at me and his little sweet eyes, the shock on his face. And he said, it's fine. I feel great. And I said, sweetheart, you're not sick. You don't need to be sick. You don't need to have those stomach aches anymore. It's just anxiety. It's just big feelings. And when you get big feelings about things, like maybe you regretted not wearing the costume to the party, sometimes it's going to come out in your stomach. But it's okay. You're okay. You're fine. Look at you. How do you feel? And he said, I feel good. And I said, all right, bud, let's go put these cards back. Let's pay for our licorice. I said, do you want the Pokemon cards? He says, I don't need the Pokemon cards. He was such a dear. And so we put the cards back. We put the cards back and we paid our, you know, $1.50 for our licorice. And guys, my podcast loves, I'm telling you this with my hand to God because he's 15. He has never had a stomach problem again. And he comes to me sometimes and he says, Mom, I have that anxiety stomach ache. I feel that feeling, that pain. I'm feeling it. And I said, okay, come lay down. Tell me what's going on. What happened today? Let's do an inventory. And he does. And it goes away. And sometimes he's just excited about something. One time we did that. And by the way, even that incident only has happened maybe two or three times in all these years. But one time it happened, he was just really excited because one of his favorite bands had their album dropping at midnight. And he was like, I just feel so excited. I think that's what it is. Because you guys, we metabolize anxiety and excitement physically in our bodies in exactly the same way. The only way we know if we're really excited or anxious about something, like which one it is by our perception of the situation, because our body feels the same when it's excited or anxious. So sometimes being really excited, especially for a kid, can cause some physical symptoms. And so these are two very different examples, but two examples of the way that I believe we can approach children and help them understand their own bodies. It is our responsibility as grownups to give that energy, to give that proverbial safe look to that kid who's looking to our eyes and saying, am I okay? But see, I think, and even though we're all so well-meaning, I think the reason that we don't know how to guide our children is because we don't have the right information ourselves sometimes. And so that's why I'm doing this podcast today, because I want you to have the right tools. So let's talk about this concretely. So here's what I want you to do if you have a child in your life that you feel is having these symptoms. The first thing you need to do, especially if it's a teenager who has been experiencing a very different energy from you over the years is to be superhuman with this child and to say, listen, I want to talk to you. I've learned something new. And when you know better, you do better. And I know something better now. And so I want to share with you something I know because I'm no longer worried about you. I'm no longer worried that your migraines are going to keep you from going to college or your stomach problems are going to require this crazy elimination diet. I thought that was the right course of action. And I know better now. And since I know better, we're going to do better and we're going to do it together. So first thing you're doing is you're sharing with them your confidence. You're giving them that look. I see you're safe now. That's what they need from you. They need to look to you and no longer see fear and uncertainty coming from you, which we all give our kids fear and uncertainty until we feel certain. I certainly was doing that to both my kids until I felt certain of what I needed to do for them. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we have to teach them how to do the work in a simpler way than I teach you guys because we're grownups and we have a capacity for much more emotional regulation than kids do. So there are two really good tools, I think, in terms of helping kids. The first is a feelings box. Some people like to call it a God box, but if you don't want to use the word God, a feelings box is good. The reason a God box works for people who do have some level of spirituality or faith with their kids is you're giving up the problems to a higher power. You're kind of giving them away. But if you don't want to use that word, a feelings box is also good because you're just, when I talk about a feelings box, I talk about when you write something down and put it in, you're sort of giving you're giving that feeling into the collective that all humans feel these difficult feelings. And when you put them in the box, you are giving them back. You're giving them into this collective of us all sharing these feelings. So just any sort of a tissue box. Tissue box works great. Sometimes I let kids decorate it, you know, especially girls love to do art. Not that I'm saying only girls, but my girls tend to enjoy that more. But if they want to, you know, put construction paper around it, decorate it, draw on it, write feelings box or God box on it. And then every day you give them like a few slips of paper and you encourage them privately in their room where you're not watching to write down a few things that have been on their minds. Maybe they got into a fight with a friend, or maybe homework's really stressing them out, or maybe they feel really sad about their dog that passed away or whatever is going on for them, and say, give it to the feelings box, give it to the God box, give it away. You're not alone with your feelings. Everyone feels these things and you don't have to hold them inside of you anymore. And so that's one really good tool for kids. And another really good tool for kids is simple inventory journaling. So you give them a notebook and you write, if for little kids, you can write 1 through 5. For teenagers, you can just explain it and say, write down 5 things that have been on your mind today. Same, you know, whatever comes up for them, friendships, school, pressure, body image, grief over something they've lost, you know, breaking up with a boyfriend or girlfriend, whatever. Write 5 things that have been on your mind today and pick one and just write about it for a few minutes. I never give them a time because sometimes my daughter has gone like, I don't know, long time. And sometimes she just does it for a few minutes. Write on it for a few minutes and just tell the truth. I don't get as granular with them about like the inner rage. I just say, tell the truth. No one's listening. We're just going to rip it up when you're done. Tell the truth about how you feel about it. Let all your feelings, pretend you're talking to someone who would never judge you, who only loves you, and no one needs to know your deep secrets except this person, and tell. And I'm telling you, it works. Those are two really good ways to reach young kids. And I'll just say as a quick addition as we close, my teenager, Isabella, who's the only child of my biological kids who I haven't yet talked about, she is less of an anxious person. She's really wired, very laid back. But she has told me many times over the course of high school that her back hurts. And I've explained journaling to her in this way, you know, in terms of the way I work. And she has journaled and she does not have back problems. So it's just important. The most important thing I can say to you guys today, give the gift to your child of showing them that when we know better, we can do better. And if you figure that this is something that TMS is an issue they're having, and you can come to it with kindness, with compassion, with togetherness, with support. And then once it's been taken care of and they're still feeling little fear with some gentle apathy, like, you're fine now. This is not a problem. We're good. I am solid and we're good. It's such a gift. And you can do this for the children in your life. And I have watched it with miraculous results with my own children. So, yeah. So I hope that was helpful today. I really enjoy telling those stories. They're really, really so important to me. It's so important to me. And it still scares me to think that they're going to suffer with TMS because I know how hard it is, but what can I do? This is life. And by the way, every single person who walks the planet has TMS, even if they don't know it. They just suffer. But we can feel our feelings. We can express ourselves and we don't need to suffer. So I hope this helped you guys. I send you big, big love. I hope you have a wonderful week. And I will see you next week with another episode of Real Time Heal, which is going to be super great. So I'm excited to share that with you guys. All right. Until next time, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs. Please go over to iTunes and rate and review this podcast. It helps so much to get it out to the people who need it. I love you, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.